Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Singaporeal Podcast. My name is Anka, and our guest today is Garth Bruin. Hello, Garth. How are you?
Hello, I'm great. Thank you, Anka. Yourself?
Oh, it's an amazing day here in Singapore. Raining so far, but it's always be good to be in town. Yeah. So, how are you? How is New Zealand?
It's amazing. We've got a bit of clouds in the sky today, but it's a beautiful day. And in New Zealand, you can't have much of a better place. It's probably one of the best countries in the world at the moment.
It is. So Garth lives in New Zealand. He's the founder of the Into the Vault Coaching. He's an active blogger and vlogger and video, and he's really into life hiking. Is this a good description about you?
Yeah, definitely. I'll just add, yeah, the life hiking, the journey of life is what I'm interested in, whether it's through walking, running, swimming, or through the mind and the mental journey that we all go through, then that's what it's all about, really.
Absolutely. Can you give us a bit of context? What is your background? How did you get to go to this one? Have you been always like this?
Well, so not specifically. My childhood, if you don't mind, I'll go back and skip through it. Don't want to go too long on it, but my childhood, I was extremely privileged. I had amazing parents, so full of love, and we were in the sort of lower middle class sort of family, and so we never went without, but I still ended up somehow ending up on a journey where I was going down the wrong path. I had 7 criminal convictions by the time I was 21. I was fighting, I was drinking, I was doing drugs and all sorts of other things to change my state, to try and make my life interesting and exciting. But it was through that journey of going down to rock bottom that I realized that I needed to make a change. And yeah, from that place, I started following the personal development journey and coming to where I am today from reading books and everything else.
Okay, so going back to the things you said you've done in your 20s and your teens, and we met at the Tony Robbins event and Day to Destiny. This is how we made friends. And Tony talks about the 6 human needs, right? Mm. You are an expert on that. Can you please get us into that a bit and tell us what were the needs you actually were driven by?
Oh, absolutely. So good question. The needs I was being driven by back in those times was, one, I was looking, the main one I was driving on was connection. So I was looking for connection with people, but the connection, the way that I saw to make connection was to have everybody like me. And that would mean I would do anything for anyone to like me. So I was using, trying to please others to give me that sense of connection and significance in other people's lives. So I do things detrimental to my health and the health of others to give me that significance, to give me that sense of connection. And then I also had certainty in my life as well, knowing that people responded to those actions that I was taking.
Oh, that's awesome. I actually relate to this one. I've been used to be driven by the same. So you mentioned the love and connection. So that was your number one need driver. And you mentioned about significance and certainty.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are your
those
needs.
Yeah. So they were I was meeting all the needs, of course, but I was meeting them all in different ways. The uncertainty also, like I was meeting all of my needs at a very high level through the negative things that I was doing at the time. So by fighting, by doing the drugs, going into depression, these were all ways that I was meeting my needs in a negative way. Whereas now I'm still meeting all of those needs, and my top two needs now, though, the other one, love and connection and contribution. So before, there was no real contribution that I had really in my life, which meant that I was always focused on me and how I could have my external circumstances benefit me in a selfish way, rather than how could I benefit others and meet those needs positively.
Wow. What a shift. What a shift. what an amazing journey. Do you know exactly when the switch was happening?
One of the memories that definitely holds true in my mind and stands out from most is when I was doing drug and alcohol counseling. I was talking to a psychotherapist because I was ordered to through the court system, and I thought, you know, if I'm going to be here, I want to make the most out of every moment with this so that I can find out what is wrong with me, is what was going through my head at the time. And I was working with the psychiatrist for 6 months, and then my sessions all finished up. And on the final session, he said to me that there's no reason you should be where you are today. He said, everything you've told me, there's no reason you should be doing the things you're doing. And that was as much as he could tell me. And I thought in my head at that time, I said, that's not good enough, because I know that because my mind, the way my mind thinks and the actions that I'm doing, they're not the same. You know, a lot of the stuff that I did when I was younger, I didn't want to do in my head, but because I was meeting certain values and everything else that I found out later on, was that I was going to do those no matter what. But at that time, I said to him, that's not good enough. I need to know and find out what's going on, because I don't want to do these things, but I'm doing them anyway. And then that's really what was one of the major catalysts for this journey that I started on, because I wanted to find the answer. I started asking the question, why do I do what I do, even though I don't want to do it?
Wow.
That sent me on the journey to finding out how the human brain works and how we create and break habits and how we meet our needs in certain ways. And it's a constantly evolving journey as well. You know, it's not, I haven't read all these books and then suddenly I'm better. I still have my own struggles that I go through as well, but they become less significant in my life, and this fact that I don't suffer through them so much anymore.
Right. So you are actually being honest to yourself. This was one of the self-realization. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely.
You are like, okay, this is not the story I want. I need to write another story, a better one for myself.
That's right. And
it's a moment of honesty over there. It's true, right?
The awareness is definitely a big part. Actually, going back further, but before that was when I was going through depression as well. And I got to the point where I had entertained the idea of suicide, so of ending my life. And I was sitting there with a razor blade in my hand. And as I was looking at my wrist, feeling sorry for myself, thinking that nobody loved me and that everyone would be better off if I was dead and all of this sort of thing, as I was bringing the blade to my wrist, I realized I had a voice came through into my head that I couldn't argue with, which said, basically, what the hell are you doing? You know that you have people that love you, you have a good life, you have all this stuff. So, you know, there is a way out of this. All you have to do is find it. And the reason I couldn't argue with the voice was because it was my own voice. And I was lucky enough on that one to, in the time of the depths of despair, I realized that there is another way. And it wasn't that it just instantly changed and shifted. That just began the journey to bring myself back out. That was the awareness that I needed to know that it was my thoughts and not me that was causing a lot of these internal emotions.
The depression you mentioned about it, some people just stay in that for too long. Some people realize it, probably your case, and they just raise themselves up as soon as possible. For those people that deal with, I don't know, it's happening in life, a breakup, a divorce, a loss of job, loss of a parent, of a child. For those people that just stay there and they don't see hope, what would you tell to them? How would you help them? How would I help them? Or imagine that it's a friend of someone that is listening to this podcast.
I think one of the biggest things with depression is because even when people see that someone else is in depression, they have no idea how to approach them, and they have no idea how to to bring the subject up in a way that does that they're afraid they're going to offend the person.
Yes.
And I think exactly. The best way to deal with that is to just say to somebody, if you know they're going through some hard times, just to tell them that you're there, because they don't want your sympathy. They don't want you to give them advice. They just want somebody to be there for them, to know that they've got somebody that cares about them. So I think the biggest thing you can do is just to turn to them and just say, hey, look, I can see that you're going through some hard times at the moment, but I just want you to know that I'm here if you ever need me. Or if you don't want to even say that, you don't want to make the assumption that they're going through a hard time, just saying to them, hey, I'm always here if you ever need me. I love you and I will be by your side if you ever need my help. I think is
that's very wise. The best way
you can do it. And I mean, there's, because you cannot help somebody else that doesn't want to help themselves. This is something that I've learned dramatically. The biggest thing you can do is help people to realize the pleasure or the positive side of their life that is a reason for coming away from the emotional state that they're in at the moment.
And you cannot push people to change if they don't want to change, but you can just show your example.
Absolutely.
By your example.
And I think asking questions. I mean, my job as a coach, people have this assumption that being a life coach or a transformational coach is about you have all of the information, and by giving someone the information, then that's how they're going to make a change. But it's not that at all. It's my job is to give you the questions to ask yourself so that you can find the answers, so that you can understand why it is that you want to make the change. Because as Viktor Frankl said, don't know if you've ever heard him, but
yeah.
It's a man's search for meaning. And as he said in there, a man with a strong enough why, or woman for that matter, can deal with almost any how. So you've got, without the why, there's no point having the tools, because I can give all of the tools that work for me. I can tell you the best tools and how to change your life literally in a matter of moments. But unless you're actually going to do the work, and unless you want to make that change to the point where you can see how good your life's going to be after you make that change, then you're going to continue doing the same stuff you're doing because it's comfortable, because you already know it, and it's the same pattern you've been running for a very long time.
And you go back to your emotional home all the time.
That's it, yeah.
Can you remind us the quote again from Viktor Frankl?
So the quote in the book is, a man with a strong enough why can deal with almost any how.
Right. And we're talking about someone that survived the Holocaust, right? And then make a life for himself, lost his book and lost...
Yes. So, yeah.
Amazing book.
I would highly recommend checking out the book if any of the listeners haven't read it before, because it's one of those books where every paragraph that you read, you have to read one paragraph at a time, then stop, and then digest that paragraph for the next 2 days before you read the next one, because there's so much meaning and so much depth behind each and every single one. But I use that book helped me to really get perspective on my life. So if I'm ever feeling in a state of lack, or I feel like I don't have this or I don't have that, then all I have to do is imagine those people that were in the Holocaust and in the concentration camps and how little they truly had. And it makes me realize just how rich and how abundant my life truly is.
That's absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. Talking about books, is there any, besides this, I guess, is there any other book that completely changed your life, or it's a reference in your life and you would recommend to people, or you make presents? I usually make books as presents.
That book is my number one gift that I give away. I keep buying myself another copy.
Wow.
And I buy it. As soon as I buy it, I meet somebody that needs it. So I always end up giving them away. I've probably given away about 50 copies of it now already.
Yeah. Wow.
But there's, for me, the books, I mean, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. That one, I'm actually rereading that one at the moment, because it's just got such a good... it's articulated very well in a way that your mind digests it and you can understand the concept of the power of attraction, the power of the universe, the power of God, or whatever you so believe, but it's the power of that external force. And when you can tap into that, how abundant your life can become.
And we're talking about a book written over like what, 80, 100 years ago?
It was written back in the 40s, I believe.
Yeah.
1840s. But it's still so relevant today, just the thinking processes, and a lot of it comes from Andrew Carnegie, which is one of the best communicators that ever lived, really. So, yeah, well.
And one of the most rich men back in the beginning of the 19th century.
Absolutely, yeah, a whole other level. So I always have the belief that if you follow what the people who have done what you want to do, and you take away from it as many lessons as you can, and then create your own out of it, then mm-hmm. you can accomplish anything. And I mean, for me, there's a certain amount of new things, but creativity comes from learning from so many different sources and different people. And then from all that information that you've taken on board, then at some stage there will be something that clicks. And then you'll get a new understanding of the entire concept. Creativity, I don't believe, comes just from nothing. It comes from learning as much as you can about a lot of different subjects and then creating new connections that haven't been made before.
Yeah. And I also do believe that we, most of us, struggle with the idea of finding purpose. And we get a lot of downtime because of that. And we compare to others when we shouldn't compare to others. You compare only with ourselves.
Yeah.
And when you put yourself in that beautiful state, when you do your exercise, when you do your practice, whatever rituals are, when you make sure that every day you leave the house in a good state, you need to make sure you feel good all day, every day. Then you do the things from the inspiration and love place, and then purpose will find you. You don't have to find purpose will find you.
And I think with purpose, there's that stigma behind it in society where you find your passion, find your purpose. But I don't believe that you need to find it or have it find you. I believe that you already are living your purpose, because everything on this earth that's alive or everything has a purpose. So by that extension, you already are living a purpose. You might not specifically realize what it is, but I think you already are living a purpose. And it's also coming down to just your purpose can be as simple as waking up every day and being the best you that you can be in that given day. And if you can do that, then what better purpose could there be?
Yeah, I like that. So going back to the books, you mentioned Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning, about purpose.
Yeah.
About purpose. You mentioned Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich. How? And then what is the another book?
Love Tim Ferriss's books, all of them. His Tim Ferriss, I suppose you would have heard of him, but he's pretty amazing kind of guy. But the 4-Hour Body, 4-Hour Work Week, 4-Hour Chef, they're all amazing books. And I mean, I love them because you can pull out information from them as you're going through. It's not really a read cover to cover book. It's just as you're going through different things, you pull out different stuff. And there's so much information in there. I just love the way that he researches and that he experiments and tests everything. Yeah. You know, he makes everything measurable, because if it's not measurable, then you can't tell if you're making progress, and progress is success, isn't it?
And so the 4-hour series, and also his latest two books, The Tribe of Mentors and The Tools of Mentors.
Yeah.
So basically, and by the way, his podcast is an inspiration for me. Like when I'm thinking of podcast, I don't know, for some reason I'm thinking Tim Ferriss.
That's because he's it's that authenticity, I think, with Tim Ferriss as well.
Yeah, interesting personality. Talking about people that inspire you, who those would be?
My inspiration. So that would be a massive one of is Tony Robbins, one of the number one personal development coaches and speakers in the entire world, and just the way that he has dedicated his life to helping others and pushes his own body, his mind and spirit beyond what most human capabilities could possibly be, in pushing the boundaries of the human capability to be able to serve and to be able to share that, that wealth of knowledge and to be able to help people understand how simple it can be to make change. Then yeah, Tim Ferriss, he's definitely an inspiration of mine, having been, you know, coming from, sort of a lower social economic background and then coming through, and just the way that he articulates his authenticity and the way that he has look out his outlook on life, really. But then of course there another man is Sir Edmund Hillary, who was the first man to climb Mount Everest, who was a Kiwi guy or a New Zealander guy.
Yeah.
And just he's an inspiration because he went to climb the tallest mountain in the world, and he just the journey that he went through to get there, it wasn't that he went, I'm going to climb Mount Everest, and then the next week he went and climbed Mount Everest. It was a long, long battle, and he failed. He failed once the first time he tried it. They went up the mountain, ended up having to turn back and come back down, but then they tried again and managed to succeed at it. So he's just a great Kiwi icon who really pushed the boundaries of the human possibilities as well. Most of the people I aspire to are the ones who are constantly pushing the boundaries of what's possible, because I believe that there are endless possibilities. It's just the limit is your imagination to how what you can create life. How you create your life is from the imagination that you have. Because every situation you can imagine your way out of it if you really, really try.
Right. Talking about Napoleon Hill, right? And that's a really New Zealand icon. And it's a really a matter of pushing the limit and the boundaries. And as Tony Robbins says, whatever you can do, you can. And whatever you cannot think you can do, you cannot. So that's it's right. A matter of... of our beliefs that it's everything
one of the great philosophers Seneca said, he said, if you think you can, and if you think you can't. But
exactly, see,
yeah, and if you
you're a fan of Seneca too.
Yeah, definitely the okay.
What about Marcus Aurelius?
Yeah
The Meditations. This is something that I'm rereading right now.
Yeah, cool there's so much wisdom from so long ago. And I think it's, you don't have to create new ideas. It's just new ways of putting it together to be able to interact with more people with it. Because of course, with Tony Robbins, he has people who connect with him, but he can only help so many because there's only so many willing to listen to his message. So the more people that can get on this journey and create their own message in their own style means that we can reach more people together. So I think, you know, they're pretty big shoes to fill, so to speak, with Tony Robbins, but I don't think anyone needs to fill those shoes. He's got the people that come and see him, and there are other people who will be willing to come and see you and come and see your listeners and come and see me, because I think we're all different in our own ways and we all have a different way of communicating. And as I've realized with a lot with the books that I read, people ask me why I continue reading book after book after book. And it's because every single book I get a new distinction from. It might be the exact same thing that the past 12 books have spoken about, but because this one said it in a certain way, it all made sense. And then I fully understood how it worked, but it was because the way that that person said it.
Yeah. So on your blog, which is Into the Vault, what is the name where people can Into the Vault?
Intothevaultcoaching.com.
Okay. You mentioned about there is two blogs, part one and part two, about your trip to Spain, the Pilgrims Santiago de Compostela. Can you tell us what actually is Santiago de Compostela and what is actually was the meaning for you?
Yeah, so I've got to continue writing on that journey because there were so many lessons learned that it would take a whole book to fill the experiences and the understandings and new distinctions that I got on that journey. But the Camino de Santiago Pilgrimage Trail is a walk in Spain that runs, well, there's multiple different ones, but the most famous one is the Camino de Frances, which starts in the southern part of France and then goes all the way out to pretty close to the west coast, about 93 kilometers from the west coast on Spain, ends up in Santiago, which is where the cathedral is in there. It was an old pilgrimage walk because the first saint's bones to ever be found in Europe were placed there, so they say, and there was hundreds of thousands of people when they were put there that came from all across Europe to make their way to that point. But going back even further than that, a lot of that Camino is also the old Romans pilgrimage that used to walk from Rome right out, and they would go all the way to Finisterre, which is the most western point in Europe, and they would walk to the edge of the world because you couldn't walk any further. So it was a pilgrimage to the end of the world, and then they would burn their clothes on the beach down there and then turn around, because why would you need your shoes and your clothes anymore if you've reached the end of the world? Where else is there left? So
how wonderful is that? God. How long is the Camino? How long is the way?
So it's around 900 kilometers, and the time it takes to do it varies depending on who you're walking with and your own pace, but the average is around 35 to 40 days is what most people generally do it in. I would suggest taking longer for it so you can stop in the towns and that sort of thing. But we were walking at a general pace of 25 kilometers a day, 20 to 25 kilometers a day sort of thing.
Walking,
yeah.
Wow. So what people would do, what's happening on those journeys? Every day walking about 30, 40 kilometers, whatever you can. What's actually happening? What's the journey actually about?
Oh, man, there's so much to it. But one of the biggest things about the journey is when you begin, you're still thinking about life and thinking about, you know, your normal day to day and all the things that you need to get done, and you need to keep in contact with this person and that person, and you've got to worry about this and worry about that. When you're meeting people, you're all doing the, hey, how are you? And you're doing all the small talk and finding out the name, where they're from and that sort of thing. And then very quickly, you start to just settle into the journey because you realize that the destination is so far away that there's no point even focusing on the destination. It's about focusing on the next step in front of you and the people that you're around and the people that are walking with you. And the people that are walking with you are from every age group, from every social economic background, from all over the world. So you've got this amazingly diverse perspective on the world by having these people to converse with, and you talk about things in your own life, and you start to see how other people see the world. You start to find out that you're not alone in the thoughts that you think. Now, because most of the time in society, we all keep inside our heads because we're afraid we might look stupid if we share those negative thoughts that are going on inside our mind. We think it's just us going through the journey. But what I found is that because you're on the Camino, you're all on this journey. You're searching for something. You don't necessarily know what. But because you're all there on this journey, everyone is willing to open up. And also because you're from all over the world in different places that nobody believes they're going to see each other again. So you just open up completely and utterly and show the exact true nature of your personality. And one of the biggest things I got from the entire community, entire experience, is that you think that you might not be accepted, but when you just be you completely and utterly, right down to who you are authentically, then it's the opposite effect. People actually appreciate you more and have more respect for you because you're willing to be you with your heart on your sleeve and being vulnerable and sharing your stories as well.
That's amazing. That's really the Bildungsroman, like the young adult journey. So what kind of people actually would be going on Santiago de Compostela, the Camino.
Oh, so many. I mean, yeah, it's everyone from every walk of life. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason as to fitness levels. I mean, I walked with a guy who most people wouldn't believe that he'd be able to do a walk like that. And every time he walked with his pack. So when people tell me they're not fit enough, then I'd show them a photo of my friend who was absolutely amazing. And then if they say they're too old, I show them a photo of the 85-year-old man that I walked with. Or if they say they're too young, I walked with a 14-year-old girl at one stage. She was walking with her mother. So there's no reason why you can't go. And there's no specific type of person that needs to go. I think it's more the Camino calls. When you hear about the Camino, you hear about that journey, there's something that calls you to it at a specific time in your life that allows you to go and have that growth.
Yeah. I'm very happy for you to you have done it, and for other people I heard, amazing journey, amazing learning and growth. Congrats on that. Congrats for the bravery. I would love to ask you a little bit about your morning rituals.
Yes.
You have morning rituals? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So my morning every day begins with, as soon as I open my eyes, because I have, let me just go back a little bit before even waking up, as I have an app which I use called Sleep Cycle, which is a free app, and it tracks your sleep cycles. So you can see each day, looking back over your night, how your sleep patterns were and that sort of thing. But I do have an alarm set on that, which will wake me up in the top of my sleep cycle if there was a chance that I slept in, which I haven't had happen for a very long time. But I'm up at 5 a.m. in the morning, wake up every day at 5 a.m., leap out of bed. Literally, as soon as I open my eyes, I hear Wim Hof. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's the Iceman.
Yes.
But Wim Hof, he said on one of Tim Ferriss's podcasts, what would he put on a billboard? And excuse my language in this part, but he said, breathe, motherfucker. So every morning, as soon as I wake up, all I hear in my head is, breathe, motherfucker. So I take a deep breath in, feel the oxygen going into my body, leap out of bed, and just say thank you. And then I turn on the lights, get some bright lights straight into my body, tell it it's wake up time. Then I make my bed straight away. Then I go jump in my car, drive down to the beach with my dog. We go for a run along the beach and then go out for a swim. I'll either go out and swim out to the boys and back about 400 meters, even in the middle of winter. And then I'll do all of my morning incantations while I'm at the beach, just enjoying the morning. And an incantation is, for those that don't know, is kind of like an affirmation where you say something, but instead of just saying it, which only uses your mind and your mouth and only a very small part of your physiology, it's using your entire body, because the body is the mind. It is part of the mind. The body sends signals to the brain. More signals are sent to the brain than the other way around. So by using your body in certain ways, it helps ingrain those things into your mind and into your life. And then after doing my morning incantations, then I will go home. I'll make a bulletproof coffee. So putting in butter and brain octane oil and a bit of turmeric and cinnamon for the extra polyphenols. Then I'll sit down with before I go for my swim, I do 20 minutes of meditation every day. And I've multiple different meditations that I do depending on how I'm feeling for the day, but always put that in. After making the coffee, I'll sit down and I'll write in my gratitude journal for about half an hour. Then I just go review my day that I've planned out the night before to see and make sure that it's all going to in the right order as to how I'm going to go about my day. And then, yeah, that's basically my morning routine.
Oh, that's an amazing morning routine you have. And you mentioned about Wim Hof, which I'm also following. For those that don't know, can you explain? I mean, everyone can go Google now, YouTube it. Can you explain what is the type of breathing you do? I'm asking you this because I know friends that recover from different heart conditions just by doing the breathing exercise, which I found amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, if you want to check out all about Wim Hof, go and find him online. It's just WIMHOF. But he's an amazing man. Swam under ice and froze his eyeballs under there. He has got over 21 records, I believe, world records. But his breathing technique is to alkalize your body and to take control of your autonomic immune system. So you can control how your body reacts to diseases, to cancers, to you name it. It helps with a lot of different things. It also sends oxygen straight into your body and into your brain to get you activated and get you going. It alkalizes your body. So many benefits to it. And I won't go completely into the method otherwise, and telling you all about the method, otherwise it'll take too long. But it's the benefit.
Let's do together one of the breathing the way Tim Hof. Let's do it. How do you say? Breathe, mother trucker.
Yeah, breathe, mother trucker.
Okay, let's do one breathing together or two, okay? One, two, three, start. Okay, so we go. Okay, that's cool. Just for an example, I like that. So for how long you go like this?
So I do three sets of it. So it's those deep breaths, fully in, and then let it out. Fully in, let it out. Fully in.
And then three sets of how many?
I do three sets. I'll do 30, between 30 and 40 breaths on the first one.
30.
And then I will exhale my breath, hold out. Generally, my first breath, negative breath hold is around 1 minute 45-ish. And then my second set is generally around 3 minutes 30. And then on the third one, my negative breath hold goes over 4 minutes sometimes.
Well, so for those that don't know, you did this deep breathing. And at the end, after the 30th one, you just hold it. And that's called retention. So what actually does
So you breathe out so that you've got no air in your lungs, and then hold that negative breath hold as long as you can until you feel you need to take a breath, and just experience the feeling of the oxygen inside your body. You can feel it buzzing through your body, and you'll find for the first time you do it, it might feel a little strange, but you'll soon realize that you don't need to take a breath, and you can just sit there and just enjoy the feeling. And then when you need to take a breath in, just take your breath in, hold it in for 10 to 15 seconds, and then breathe out and just sit and experience the feelings that come through before you start breathing again.
Yeah. And then the method includes a cold shower between, and sometimes the breathing part. And then the third part would be the push-ups, which you do the same. So you breathe all, you do the breathing, full out, exhaust all the air in the lungs, and then you do push-ups without air inside the body. And it's actually proven. I also experienced this. You do more exercise than you actually do with the normal breathing.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's awesome.
I think it's amazing. It's amazing how what you put into your body can change the, you know, what you can already do with the body you have. I know from one experience when I started doing the ketogenic diet, and when I was in full ketosis, I went to do.
Yeah, tell us about what the ketogenic diet is.
So the ketogenic diet's a more high fat, lower carbohydrate diet, medium protein. And I think a lot of people get excited about it or don't want to do it because they think it's all just fat and nothing else. But I personally like to, with the carbohydrates that I do take in the day, I make sure that they are going to give me all my micronutrients and macronutrients for the day as well. Otherwise you can get into an acidic state, which is not where you want to be. But the ketogenic diet with ketones are a byproduct of processing fat in your body. So what used to happen in the prehistoric times is when the men would go out to hunt in the day, they wouldn't take any food with them. They would just go out hunting, and sometimes they could be out for 3 days. So for them to continue running, because we, in modern Western society, we see everything as needing glycogen all the time or needing those carbohydrates to keep your glycogen levels up. But theirs were very low because of all the complex carbs they ate. They ate a lot of high fat, high protein, and no processed carbs, all the complex carbs. So their body would be on the edge of burning fat all the time. So every day they would drop into a state of ketosis where their body was burning fat for fuel. And then that would give them the... It would give clearer vision. It would give better hearing. They would also get a longer sustainable energy, more than the glycogen would give. And just so many benefits to it. Decreases inflammation. The most recent initial studies, I guess you'd say, were that sort of brought it back into the limelight, were done with epilepsy, with epileptic children. They were suffering from epilepsy. So they put them on the ketogenic diet, it either decreased their symptoms significantly or completely eradicated it altogether whilst they stayed on the ketogenic diet. It didn't necessarily cure it, but it cured the symptoms of it, not having the same seizures. So that sort of was what really brought it back into the limelight now. But it's great for the human body to be in a state of ketosis, whether you do that through the diet or whether you do it through brain octane oil, which won't get into it, but it puts you into a state of ketosis just by having that. But it just gives you that mental clarity, brain fog disappears, and there's so many benefits. If you want to have a look at it, go check it out. I would recommend, if you already know some information on it, going and checking out Dr. Dominic D'Agostino's podcast with Tim Ferriss. That was the initial one that I first heard, and that was what, I didn't understand half of it, but it got me excited about it and got me to give it a go and try it out. So that definitely is a big part of it for me. But I'm also now on more of a, it's kind of my own diet that I've created, because I wanted to make sure that I get all of my micronutrients, macronutrients.
Yeah. Tell us about it.
To be honest, it's pretty complicated. It'll take quite a while to go through everything in it. But the basic principles of it is I do restricted feeding. So I'll generally only eat one or two meals in a day, and I'll eat them between 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. most of the time. And then sometimes I'll switch it up just to keep the body guessing a little bit. And then I'll do a 24-hour fast generally once a week, and a 2-day or 48-hour fast once a month. And then I'm also having a lot of saturated fats, good healthy saturated fats like grass-fed butter and extra virgin cold-pressed coconut oil, a little bit of olive oil, but always uncooked, otherwise it destroys the fats. And there's so many other little things. I mean, I could go on all day about nutrition, because it's helped me so much, but it's all the little hacks, all the little things. So all those little 2%ers, when you make that little change, then you get a little bit more. When you make another little one, you get a little bit more. You may not notice it as you're doing them, but when you go back out of them again, when you stop doing them, then you really feel the difference. You realize just how...
You really feel the productivity, whatever you do for your work, the mental clarity and everything drops considerably. Yeah. And then you're thinking, Absolutely. Wow, what's happening with me? Why I feel so miserable right now?
Yeah, I didn't experience.
And we humans don't really make the connection between what we eat and how we feel.
Yeah.
And it can influence you up to, I don't know, 72 hours. So why I feel shit today, like, oh, wow, I ate that junk 2 days ago.
When I look at it, this is the way that I look at nutrition, is that most people don't realize this, but our body is only 40% human DNA. The rest of the DNA in our bodies is bacteria and microorganisms that make up the rest of it. So we're only 40% human as people. So that means we're not really feeding us. We're actually feeding those bacteria, those microbes, and if we can get them operating well together so they are happy, then we become happy in the mind, because they send signals to our brain telling what's good, what's bad. And it might come up as a thought of, oh, I hate my mother-in-law, or I hate this person, I hate that person. It might, well, you're not good enough. It might come up in those thoughts, but really it's your body that's telling you there's something wrong.
Yeah. Okay, we are moving towards the final part of our meeting today. I find so many things in common with you. I think we'd be able to talk about it hours, probably have to schedule somewhere a podcast in the future. So I would love to ask you, we've done this in with the Day to Destiny with Tony Robbins. What is your love vision? How is the partner, your ideal partner looking like?
My love vision. So, to be honest, I know my values and the principles by which I wish to live my life. And as long as those values and principles can align with another person, that's the main thing that I truly look for, is to be on a similar journey that doesn't matter necessarily by the means with which we affect the world, but the fact that that's what we want to be doing together so that we can support each other. A loving, supporting relationship where we both see each other's lives as being more important than our own. So that there's never a thing of, you don't do this for me. It's a, how can I do this for you mindset.
Wow. That's a very three-dimensional relationship, right? Like, your needs are my needs.
That's it.
How can I serve you?
I think,
oh, I love that.
I think it's the best, the only way that a relationship can truly survive and to thrive long-term. Because as soon as it comes into a me situation, then it changes the balance of things. But if you're constantly thinking about the happiness of the other person and both of you are doing it together, then I don't believe that there ever can be as much issue. Of course, there's always going to be ups and downs and round and rounds when you're in a relationship, but as being two different people. But I think if you have that as the main focal point of your relationship, then you're pretty well sure to succeed.
Yeah, I love that. What you mentioned the values. What values would you appreciate in a partner?
My number one value is health and vitality. And then I believe that they should, the top two values at least should align. So, I mean, it's health and vitality and love are the main ones, but having someone who's playful and joyous and, you know, we just have fun, because life's really about having fun, enjoying life. And yeah, that's, I think, the main ones that I would focus on. I don't go deep into exactly the specific person that they need to be. I imagine the experience of life that I would be leading if I was with that person. Because yeah. I believe that if you focus on, if I go, oh, this is what I want, this person, well, that person might turn up, but it might not be the actual, might not actually be the right person for me to live the experience of life that I want to lead. So if I just imagine it living the experience of life that I want to lead, then the person with the values to match that experience of life will turn up instead.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. I love it. Okay, so before we are ending up here, can you tell us about you as a coach, what programs you are running, who are you coaching, who should look up to you, and where people can find you?
Yeah, cool. So currently I'm running a mid-year, new year program, which is a 6-week one-to-one coaching program. And yeah, it's getting people to be able to get the ball rolling, because get that momentum building straight away. So it's a lot cheaper than my normal coaching package, but I'm doing it just so that people can really make that start and to understand the value of coaching. Because a lot of people, I think, look at the price point initially and don't really understand how valuable it can be. So I'm trying to give people an easily affordable accessibility to it so that they can understand the value of coaching for them.
It was something I learned, I'm interrupting you here, from Elliot Hulse, when he was mentioning that everyone needs a teacher, a coach, a mentor, because there are so many things that someone else went through, and it's easy for you to just don't stop doing the mistakes and just learn from someone that already went through all these things and can show you the way. And you should pay for, you should pay, have a coach and pay for a coach to keep you accountable, to have questions to go and ask. And you are paying for that service. So you should be responsible for your growth this way. So until that point, I was looking for free things until the point. And like, okay, that's an investment. And universe basically is matching your investment, right? You invest and it's bringing you the same amount of more back.
Absolutely. Which, I mean, yeah. From when I first started coaching, because of course I've been doing all my own personal development, and I thought to myself, I can do this all on my own. And then until when I received, well, when I took the employ of my first coach, I realized just how short I'd been selling myself, because you are you. So you're biased on your own mind. You might think that you can pull out everything, but you can't a lot of the time pick up the submodalities, these subconscious things that you say as part of the pattern of who you are and your personality. But when somebody else is from the outside looking in, they pick the things out that you didn't even realize you were saying, or the way you were saying things, because you are you. So that's part
of you are the only person in the world that doesn't experience you. So you just cannot know who you are. How you are perceived, and I was
with the coaching mentor relationship is, you know, if you were going to, I like to use the garden, you know, if you've got the garden of your life where you go and you've got weeds that are overtaking the garden, and you pull those weeds out, you can go around and rip the weeds out and then chuck them in the center of the garden, but unless you know how to keep the weeds away, unless you know how to turn the soil, what fertilizers go with what plants, how to keep all the pests away properly, and how to really put the life into those plants, then your plants, you might plant seeds, but unless you tend them and know how to tend them, then those plants are going to quickly die. So you can plant as many great emotions or feelings that you want to have and thoughts, but unless you tend them and know how to tend them, then they'll very quickly whittle and die. Whereas if you go to get a gardener, would you go and find somebody to help you that's a mate that's got a little garden at home that does a tiny bit of gardening and he's had a little bit of success? Or would you go and find the best goddamn gardener in the world, and if you could afford him, and get his service, or find the best person that you could possibly afford at the time, so that your garden of life thrives, so that your garden takes off and you actually get the results you want? You were the one who pulled out the weeds and did the hard, you're going to do all the hard labor, but with the knowledge of the person who knows how to tend those plants to really get a garden that attracts life into it, then, and in a lot shorter period of time, and save yourself the suffering. Yeah. Then I think that's the key to it.
So if I would look, I don't know that I'm not waking in the morning up and I know that, oh my God, I need a coach. I know I have a problem. I know I'm not doing well. I know I'm not productive. So I realized that probably someone can show me the way, right? So how I am going to someone like Garth, how do I find you?
So you can find me at intothevaultcoaching.com, or just hit me up on Facebook. I'm on Facebook there. I've also got my Twitter account as well, and Instagram, all, you know, the normal social media pages. And because I'm the only Garth Bruin in the world on social media, means you just
look for Garth. Can Bruin. We spell that for us? It would be
so it's Garth, G-A-R-T-H, and Bruin, B-R-E-W-I-N. Just think of brewing beer without the G at the end.
Right. So you first, you give a free session, right?
How yes. is your program working like? I do even better than that, actually. I have a thing called the Brewski Guarantee, which is where if people come along for their consultation call and they feel their time's been wasted, then not only do I give them their money back, but because I like to take a deposit so that I know that people are serious to actually come along, they can have their deposit back under any circumstance under the sun. But if they feel their time's been wasted, not only do they get their deposit back, but they also get $15 so that they can go and buy a couple of beers on me and at least say that after their one experience with Garth Bruin, they came out better off.
Great, great. So, Garth, I would like to acknowledge you for the amazing work you've done with yourself, for leading yourself, and for the passion you want to share everything you learn with others, helping and supporting others, for the passion you put in your videos, in your blogs, in your vlogs, and everything I watched. It's so authentic and it's coming from your such a big heart you have, which it's impossible not to like and not to be wanted to listen to that person to because you know it's authentic, you know it's real, you know it's coming from the heart. So you have an amazing purpose and mission in this life, and I'm happy that there are people like you that do this to the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Anka. I appreciate that. I would like to actually acknowledge you as well for the journey you're on, because it's amazing. I mean, you're starting this is the first podcast episode, everybody. Whoop, whoop.
Yeah.
It's amazing that you would like to share your knowledge with the world and your kind, beautiful heart. And I mean, after meeting you at the Date with Destiny and just seeing, you know, the passion in your eyes and in your heart that you care so much for others. And this is the first of many podcasts. And I know that you'll find so many ways to share that love with the world. So thank you very much for all that you do.
Thank you. Thank you, God. Have a good day.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Thanks very much. We will talk to you soon.